reading is from the Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 2, Devotion Through Application to the Speculative Doctrines. And it is Krishna's beginning on page 11. Thou grieveth for those that may not be lamented, whilst thy sentiments are those of the expounders of the letter of the law. Those who are wise in spiritual things grieve neither for the dead nor for the living. I myself never was not, nor thou, nor all the princes of the earth, nor shall we ever hereafter cease to be. As the Lord of this mortal frame experienceth therein infancy and old age, so in future incarnations will it meet the same. One who is confirmed in this belief is not disturbed by anything that may come to pass. The senses, moving toward their appropriate objects, are producers of heat and cold, pleasure and pain, which come and go and are as brief and changeable. These do not endure, O son of Bharata. For the wise man, whom these disturb not, and to whom pain and pleasure are the same, is fitted for immortality. There is no existence for that which does not exist, nor is there any non-existence for what exists. By those who see the truth and look into the principles of things, the ultimate characteristic of these both is seen. Learn that he by whom all things were formed is incorruptible, and that no one is able to effect the destruction of it, which is inexhaustible. These finite bodies, which envelop the souls inhabiting them, are said to belong to him, the eternal, the indestructible, unprovable spirit who is in the body. Wherefore, O Arjuna, resolve to fight. The man who believeth that it is this spirit which killeth, and he who thinketh that it may be destroyed, are both alike deceived, for it neither killeth nor is it killed. It is not a thing of which a man may say, it hath been, it is about to be, or is to be hereafter, for it is without birth and meeteth not death. It is ancient, constant, and eternal, and is not slain when this its mortal frame is destroyed. How can the man who believeth that it is incorruptible, eternal, inexhaustible, and without birth, think that it can either kill or cause to be killed? As a man throweth away old garments and putteth on new, even so, the dweller in the body, having quitted its old mortal frames, entereth into others which are new. The weapon divideth it not, the fire burneth it not. The water corrupteth it not. The wind drieth it not away. For it is indivisible, inconsumable, incorruptible, and is not to be dried away. It is eternal, universal, permanent, immovable. It is invisible, inconceivable, and unalterable. Therefore, knowing it to be thus, thou shouldest not grieve. The talk for today is entitled, What is the Purpose of Spiritual Evolution?
Our big question this morning, and perhaps it is always the question we ask What is the purpose of spiritual evolution? What is its purpose? Well, we are told that all that exists is animated or informed by the universal soul or spirit. That not an atom in our universe can be outside of this omnipresent principle. So we're talking about everything, this spiritual evolution. Well, again, we must have a common ground or basis on talking about this. So what is our definition of spirit? Because we look in our studies and we see the absolute, then we see spirit, then we see mind manifesting. But then when we look at the individual, we see it expressed as Atma is spirit. Buddhi is spiritual soul. Manas is human soul. And the Kamarupa is the animal soul. So there's different words for different things. So we must have a basic understanding of what is the absolute, from which does everything come? What is that? And how do we know it? Well, it's said that it is eternal, that it is boundless, is immutable, is omnipresent. But then it says, no words can describe it. This only gives us an inkling of consideration. It is beyond our grasp. And it is the font of all of life. It's expressed as a great breath, a coming forth and a withdrawal of this life force. From darkness into light, from light into darkness. So when we speak of the world in which we live, there is that absolute. It is no, we do not call it God because it is not a being, but it's beingness. And this beingness pervades all of life. So what does evolution have to do with it then? Well, evolution is really the reason or the purpose of spiritual evolution. We come forth from this absolute. And we are spiritual beings. We are Buddhi nature is present. We're Atma Buddhi. Until awakened is in us, or the flame of mind is given to man. But it is given to the entire universe. It is a principle within itself, and it is wide and broad, and it encompasses from anywhere from instinct to intuition. So mind came on the scene, and with this mind, as this mind unfolded, nature in its darkness began to rise up to meet this spiritual essence. And all the lower kingdoms began through design, through intelligence, began to form kingdoms and cooperation, and life arose out of the darkness. Until at one point, the form was more or less perfected so that the spiritual beings could unite in them. Because latent in all these lower kingdoms is mind. It just needs some candle or some flame to light it. So that absolute, that spiritual sun, shines forth in everyone. So we are evolving. We are the spiritual evolution. That if we look that all of matter does not exist without spirit. And within this confines of these lower principles, our life and our will and our purpose unfolds. And that is how to become spiritual beings on this physical plane. Well, we first must know what we are, that we are spiritual beings, and that through karma and through the obligation of brotherhood and compassion, all life is moving forward and becoming. So we stand at the pinnacle of all that evolution. That all of life is trying to become self-conscious. So we stand where we either uplift life or degrade it. We are the choosing beings. We are the gods of the world in which we live. So if we are all spirit, well, what is going on? Well, I think in our reading shows that we don't know that we're permanent. We don't believe it. We don't believe that we're not going to die. Yeah, sometimes we feel like it, and sometimes we feel like we're dead already. But it's the reality is that there's an enduring reality, and these truths are part of it. So this evolutionary process, we are told, begins in spirit, and it manifests in both the intellectual, spiritual nature, the intellectual nature, and the physical nature. Well, what does the physical and intellectual have to do with the spiritual? Well, it adds to it. It informs it. It makes it wise. It gives it knowledge. Now, is often we find in the writings of H.P. Blavatsky, William Q. Judge, and Robert Crosby, aids to help us keep alive this knowledge, this understanding of who we are. I'd just like to read a couple of things. And just for your listening pleasure. This immortal thinker, having such vast powers and possibilities, all this because of his intimate connection with every secret part of nature from which he has been built up, stands at the top of an immense and silent evolution. What then is the universe for? And for what final purpose is man, the immortal thinker, here in evolution? It is all for the experience and emancipation of the soul, for the purpose of raising the entire mass of manifested matter up to the stature, nature, and dignity of conscious godhood. The great aim is to reach self-consciousness, not through a race or a tribe or some favored nation, by and through the perfecting of the whole mass of matter, as well as what we now call soul. Nothing is or is to be left out. The aim for present man is his initiation into complete knowledge. For the other kingdoms below him, that they may be raised up gradually from stage to stage, to be in time initiated also. This is evolution carried to its highest power. It is a magnificent prospect. It makes of man a god and gives to every part of nature the possibility of being one day the same. This is who and what we are. It is a great mystery. But there has to be an understanding within our very nature that if we look and we befriend that warrior that's within us, that unchanging observer of the ever-changing, and befriend that warrior. We sometimes ask, well, this process is filled with conflict and difficulties. It's because the only way we will grow is through these conflicts and difficulties. The only way. So our present duty is to face these problems and to rise above them and to be a force for good. We just like to read one other thing, just to bring everything into perspective. Now, we are told that time is not what we think it is. It is only due to our concept of what time is. We've always thought that time was confined to this little world in which we lived of some 70 to 100 years. And that the only cycles that we would see are the ones that are 2,000, 4,000 year history could show us. But theosophy tells us that time is vast and beginningless and endless. And that we are but pilgrims on this great journey of evolution. And that many of the things which we do not understand will be revealed to us. But it takes an inquiry mind. You have to ask questions. You have to question that which we already know, even if you think it is correct, and try to find ideas that will stretch that imagination. Well, here is one of those ideas that can be found in the Secret Doctrine. It's from the Book of Zohar, which we are told has a great wealth of knowledge for us, even if we read it and we do not comprehend it. It's talking to our soul nature. And remember that. Even though it's difficult, push forward and try to imbue our body with a higher understanding. A quote from the SD, The holy youths, the gods, refuse to multiply and create species after their likeness, after their kind. They are not fit forms for us. They have to grow. They refuse to enter the chayas, those shadows or images, of their inferiors. Thus had selfish feelings pervaded from the beginning, even among the gods, and they fell under the eye of karmic lipikas. Now it goes on, and we will not explain any of this. We will just read this, and you have to explain it to yourself. But stanza 6 says, the curse is pronounced. They will be reborn in the fourth race, suffer and cause suffering. This is the first war. It was the fall of spirit into generation, not the fall of mortal man. It has already been stated that to become a self-conscious spirit, the latter must pass through every cycle of being, culminating in the highest point on earth in man. Spirit, per se, is an unconscious, negative abstraction. Its purity is inherent, not acquired by merit. Hence, as is already shown, to become the highest Dhyan Chohan, or the highest spirit, it is necessary for each ego to attain to full self-consciousness as a human. And if we look back in other religions, the Kabbalists of the Jews, that spirit could belong, that no spirit could belong to the divine hierarchy unless Rosh, the spirit, was united to Nefesh, the living soul. Atma Buddhi, once the Buddhi Manas breaks from the mortal Atma, of which it Buddhi is the vehicle, Atma passes into non-being, which is absolute being. This means that the purely nirvanic state is a passage of spirit back to the ideal abstraction of beingness, which has no relation to the plane on which our universe is accompanying its cycle. We can go on and read and read, and it's sort of like poetry, because it's, what does it mean? So in saying that, this adventure has been one of no sound, and I cannot hear anyone, so I don't know if SL is back on. Yes, he is. So I will sort of turn it over to SL for the moment, and I'll try to get back on again with sound. But until then, SL, please. Any questions, please direct them to SL.
Let's begin just taking a minute to recapitulate some of the main points that were given. One, there is one purpose of spiritual evolution for the soul, and that is the self-conscious realization of all souls that they are fundamentally identical with the universal oversoul. Another way of saying that, the realization that universal brotherhood is a fact in nature. And that can only be achieved by the realization that that universal soul, one soul, is the self of all in manifestation. 2, that when the soul comes forth for that pilgrimage to gain that self-conscious realization, there are two fields. There is the field of experience that extends over many, many lives, in which that self-conscious realization has to be achieved. And there is the field of that self-conscious realization in any one life, in any one incarnation, in which the embodied soul has to break free from the delusions of matter, of the senses, in order to gain in this life that realization and act accordingly. And 3, there are 3 aspects to understanding and applying practically the understanding of what is the purpose of spiritual evolution. And those aspects are, first, we have to have the right mental framework. I think we have to maintain the right mental framework or philosophy or approach. And we think that was well expressed in the talk. 2, we have to have the right motivation. Having the right mental framework and understanding, this gives us the motivation to understand what we need to accomplish in this life. And 3, we need the right method, the right path to pursue. So that whole idea of the purpose, what is the purpose, will affect our mental attitude in this life, our motivation this life, and the method or the path by which we conduct our lives. And so we think we may have some contact with the chairperson.
Video.
Let me see. Wait a second.
We can hear you. Can you hear us?
See?
Okay. Can you close the video so I can go in and look?
Okay.
All right, that's off. And I turned the mic.
Okay. So while they're trying to still connect, we'll open it up for your questions, comments on this subject. MHW.
We hear a lot the phrase nature unaided fails. So is this the same as when we're talking about the path of spiritual evolution? Then in regards to helping nature, what is it then that we have to do in order to help nature along its spiritual path?
Mike, I want to get to your where you can see the microphone.
Okay. All right. Nature unaided fails. What does that have to do with the path of spiritual evolution or the purpose of spiritual evolution? Nature is more than just the kingdoms of nature as we observe them in their physical forms. There is a spiritual essence, a soul essence, if you will, in all the kingdoms of nature, in all the species, which gives life, consciousness, and intelligence, memory, receptivity, and action to those forms. What is lacking is self-conscious choice, free will, to direct that evolution. So, in order for the awareness, the consciousness evolving through those forms to aspire, to reach up to self-conscious awareness, at some point, the intervention and assistance of self-conscious beings, beings who have achieved that state in a previous or earlier period of evolution, is required. it is, in a sense, like walking into the room, and there is a candle burning, which gives some light, but not enough light to really navigate the room safely and to see where everything is, what can be done with the room. And so to that little light in the room already, a more powerful light has to be added. And in that way, that is the role of a self-conscious soul, what we call the human soul. That's their purpose in spiritual evolution, to raise up the awareness, the consciousness, the intelligence in the lower kingdoms of nature, to help nature in that way. And in so doing, also raise up the very substance of the vehicles they use. In doing that, they create, those self-conscious beings create better opportunities for their own spiritual evolution towards a greater realization of the self. Because, as said, in order to gain that, we need experience through a form. And so the better the form, the better the instrument provided by nature, the easier, the better, the more productive will be that soul evolution through many lives. So our nature requires aid, as well as the nature of the kingdoms around us. And that's provided by self-conscious thinking souls, what we call the human soul. Now, there was a chat that came in, and we'll just ask the question for the group. In lifting up matter on the cosmic scale, why is there not one giant planet where it could all happen together? Well, if we can rephrase the question, if we understand it. If the purpose is to lift up cosmic matter on a cosmic scale, why is it occurring in so many different nuclei of periods and points of evolution? Why is it scattered over many, many diverse systems and universes and galaxies and worlds? Why can't it just take place in one area? It seemed like it would be very efficient. Focus your energy in one place. Why is it necessary, in order to accomplish the evolution of matter in a cosmic way, that there be diversity, that there be differentiation, that there be separate areas of intervention? Why do you think that? Why can it not all be done in one place? Any thoughts on that? TK.
Well, we wonder, you know, not only is it happening on so many uncountable, in so many uncountable solar systems, but the same process is happening in each individual thinker. So the thinker has to achieve it through his surroundings, through service to his surroundings for himself, and bring everything with him. So, and then there are, you know, like minds that think together. And so there are groups of people, and there are nations of people, there are worlds of self-conscious thinkers who are working, who are learning together. So if it was all just, you know, but ultimately it's the same goal. There are just, the karma of the thinker is just that. It's not all the same karma for each individual. So the condition, you know, the conditions are different, but the goal is the same. And since the conditions are different, the process to achieve the goals, they're the same in principle, but different in form.
So applying that contribution in a cosmic sense, in the universal sense. What we're seeing is that the particular planet or scene of evolution is peculiar to the degree of intelligence that's informing it, that is evolving through it. So many millions of planets, so many millions of hierarchies of degrees of evolutionary consciousness. So although the overall goal for soul is to reach self-conscious awareness and raise up matter, for any one individual soul or collectivity of souls, their progress is relative. And it's a process that's been brought over from the past. So we do not all achieve the same level of understanding in any one lifetime, in any one period of evolution of a planet, or even the universe. And in the next cycle, we each individually and collectively where we have left off. So, there could be no one planet which would be perfect for every soul. But the experience provided by this earth is not only the creation of those souls, those intelligences that are evolving here, but provides the experience necessary. Those experiences, those conditions are different on other planets and other solar systems, depending on the intelligence evolving here. And when we finish gaining all the experience we can here collectively, the intelligence working here will move on, create a new scene or a new planetary system where it can gain further growth and experience. So our evolutionary goal is one, but it's the path varies according to the pilgrims. JCS, you had your hand up.
The thought occurred that an analogy might be the creation of a home and a family. There's a oneness in love and compassion of a marriage of two individuals, so that from the one love is joining of two individuals, and as they have children, as they procreate, they make the effort to give a universal arena for evolution, for growth and development for those children. And yet the wild card is the free will and choice, the motivation and the past karma of each of those children to bloom where they are and create the universe of their own being. So there is a oneness, there is a source of the entire family unit, but the differentiation that comes forth is created by soul working through the human conditions by free will and choice. And at the cosmic collective level, we might say it would be similar.
So as above, so below, we see that having a home is a common experience, but not only do homes, as they are built, look differently, but the way they are furnished is different. Just think, moving into a new home. If it's bare, there's no furniture, not only is that home in the neighborhood, the way the garden looks, according to the interests and prospects and resources of the individual family. But once you move it in, you make it your own. You decorate it your own. And what's interesting is years later, when you may leave that home and you remove everything from it, you wonder, what is it about that home that made it so personal to me? Because you leave it, it's like an empty shell again. And you realize that what made that home particular to you was the way you decorated it, what you brought to it. So in our individual lives, we see that the value of our lives, we're all here for the different reasons, is not just the circumstances, but the decoration we bring to it. The thoughts, the feelings, the personality, the intentions, that's what makes it unique to us, how we decorate this personality, this life in which we live. It makes it unique to us, and so many different human beings, so many different ways we can decorate. So all our lives, every one of our lives is peculiar to us, is important to us to evolve, and special. And when you think of it, if you come into a place and somebody's left some furniture there or some decorations there, some of them you may keep, but others that have nothing to do with you or maybe contrary, you get rid of or you give away. So there's something in the soul nature that knows what it needs, and it's peculiar to itself, and it just doesn't sell for uniformity. Everything the same for everybody. We need differentiation of experience in order to grow. And as said, what happens on our personal levels in one life, by analogy and correspondence, goes on through many lives. And the earth is our home. It's different from other homes. And the nature where we find ourselves, what goes on here, is peculiar to the intelligence evolving here in this particular time.
All right.
So we have then the framework given to us, presented in the talk. Let's just touch on understanding that framework. We understand our motive. We understand the what is the purpose of spiritual evolution for the soul, from the framework, from the universal ideas presented, universal unity, reincarnation, karma, our spiritual nature. Well, what is the purpose? We spoke about that. To raise up the intelligence in all the kingdoms of nature, to raise up the substance, to progress as souls in our understanding over many, many lives. Now, the key idea is, what is the method that we have to pursue in view of that greater purpose of what is the purpose of spiritual evolution? How do we conduct our lives? What is the best way to proceed with that understanding? So what do you think? In view of the larger purpose, what is the best method, or what are the most successful methods for us to fulfill in order to achieve that goal, individually and collectively as humanity? Any thoughts on that? MDW. Okay, MDW. You have to, you can hear us, but now we can't hear you. Put your mic on. Okay, so we'll try again. Another. Okay, is there another, we're still having some technical difficulties with MDW. Is there another question or comment? Well, on the method, JCS.
The article that was assigned and discussed in the Friday night roundtable Wadia's article on sacrifices and sacrifice referred to the practice that's recommended. And he says, inquiry and search, humility and service, and the disciple is thus taught by the seers. So if as free and independent thinkers, we make a daily effort to inquire, to the endeavor to look into the meaning of things and to search for truth, to apply the three fundamentals perhaps, and then to be humble in our relationships with all else, and to serve. If we're mindful of that, is that the kind of method that we could carry with us day by day by day, life by life by life?
So there are two general methods by which we can try to accomplish our goal of spiritual evolution, which is one, self-conscious realization and unity with the source of all. In various traditions, it's given different names, but in the East, it's referred to as nirvana, that absolute state of self-conscious union with the whole, with the all, universal oversoul. So one method is to completely liberate ourselves from those conditions which seem to restrict that understanding. And it can result in a physical and social isolation from the world, of a physical restraint of the senses, a monastic and hermetic type life, a life of restricting the body and the passions, of denying them their expression, a life of just self-consciously trying to pursue our own liberation and salvation in that unity. That can be one purpose. The other purpose, if we keep in mind that our goal is not only to contact nature and raise it up, but to bring our own nature in such a way that it can be one and move towards the universal understanding, is called sacrifice or renunciation. Liberation or renunciation. Renunciation is just another word for sacrifice. And so the purpose of spiritual evolution in a general way, and we each develop our own methods of doing it, is the attempt to sacrifice our own personal self-interests to the benefit, to the higher benefit of another. And we're not speaking of the kingdoms of nature, it begins practically with our own families, with our own contacts, with our own friends. This is where we learn. And so it's putting ourselves, our own personal interests in the background in order to help on the spiritual evolution of others. And that requires sacrifice or renunciation of our own interests. The thing about it, though, is we cannot help another without helping ourselves. We cannot work to raise up nature, whether kingdoms of nature or the nature of human beings in general, without creating a better environment for our own progress. And so by pursuing that path, we bit by bit do liberate ourselves from our ignorance, from our delusions, from our false understandings, but we don't isolate ourselves from our duty and responsibility to the others around us. So that's the two ways the methods diverge. MDW, can you hear us?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, yes, yes.
You can hear me?
Yes.
That part of ourselves, our feeling nature, we try to be more human by how we are with other people. Is showing compassion or trying to develop that part of ourselves where we feel connected. And we've always wondered that if this is the attitude of all of us, that we can live in peace and harmony, that there is a common purpose and a common identity.
Remember, we spoke about the three important aspects: motivation, method, and mindset or attitude. We used M in each case to help us remember, but you get the general idea. So our motivation may be in the right place, but our mindset may be off. And so we restrict, we limit the way we pursue our evolution and the methods we use. So we may have the motivation to extend our brotherly feeling, our sisterly feeling, to those we love and care about, but we restrict it by our mindset, because we only do it with those we identify with, who we say are like ourselves, or think like us, or feel like us, or want the same things of us, as us. So we have that human feeling, but it's narrowed, it's not universal. So therefore, the methods we use may be very contrary. They may be directed towards the better of some, but either ignore or oppose the development of those who do not identify with us. And so in order for us to really develop that human nature, it has to be all inclusive. We have to have a mindset which includes all. So in this process of spiritual evolution, we don't become less human. We don't become less feeling. We don't become less caring. We don't drift off into some spiritual unconcern. It expands. It becomes more inclusive of the people we're with. It develops. So it's really a development of not just our godlike nature, but our human nature as well. So we are going to stop here for the moment, and we welcome you all to our Wednesday evening class, which will continue in the consideration of reincarnation, which we've been talking about. And next week, we'll continue more on the lines of spiritual evolution, the path of spiritual evolution. So our meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. See you next week.